for Friday, April 13th, 2018, listening to The VAP, episode 293, Big Pain.
With 2 tons of aluminum hitched to his bumper, cruising down the internet superhighway, The VAP is screaming right to your ears. Vintage Airstream Podcast. And now your host for the Vintage Airstream Podcast, Tim Shepard.
Living in aluminum.
Here we are back again, episode 293. I'm your host, Tim Shepard. I have with me Colin Hyde. Welcome, Colin.
Good day, everybody. Coming to you from beautiful Peru, New York, where it is mid-April, and we got snow last night. What's up with that?
Oh, wow, that's crazy. I'm supposed to do that?
Yeah. I know. This is... When we got back from Florida, I figured, okay, you know, we might get a little bit more snow here and there, but basically it's going to be nice and warm by now. I don't think so.
Oops.
I mean, snow's still out there. I mean, it's just a dusting, but I don't care. It's white, cold stuff on the ground.
Wow. We've been having nice sunny days, nice spring days here the last several, a little bit of wind and a threat of rain, but no rain yet, so we'll see.
Well, you probably didn't have to scrape your window to go to work this morning, did you?
No, I did not.
In fact, you probably don't have to do that in January.
No, especially if I park inside. But yeah, we can get enough ice, you know, on there that I have to spray it down.
But, spray? What's that?
Just spray it with a hose with the wipers going so you can get it cleared off and get out.
No, we scrape it.
Oh, no.
If you spray it with a hose, everything will freeze up.
Oh.
Not to mention the hose will freeze up.
Oh. Well, you're going to retire somewhere where you don't have to do that, I hope.
That's the idea.
All righty. Well, let's get started. We only got a couple questions, a couple voicemails. If you're listening, you need to send in your questions or comments to questions@thevap.com, or you can call in our voicemail line at 707-533-4827. That's 533-4VAP, and leave us your comment or question. I'm going to lead off our buddy over Steve over at m4led.com. He's made a bunch of LED light replacements, direct replacements for Airstreams, and we've been recommending him for quite a while. Both Colin and I have. You still outfitted all LED, right?
Yep. Oh yeah, and they're great. It's I got the was it natural white, I think they called it, and you got the quote unquote dirty yellow, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I want the vintage shade of yellow white light. You went one
right. And I'll tell you, I put the two in together, like one in one light and one in another light. Dramatic difference. The ones I got was kind of like the sun turned on inside the trailer.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas the yellow ones, they look exactly the type of light they cast was exactly like the old incandescent bulbs that were in there originally. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for the vintage look, that's what you'd go for. But if you want to see, go for the sunlight.
Yep. So Steve wrote me this last week. He said, by an Airstream owner's request, we now make a 14-inch LED light tube, 14-inch LED tube light that some specific Airstreams use, and it's very hard to find a 12 in a 12-volt direct tube. We have it in cool white and natural white, the two most popular colors. It's Colin's cool white, I guess. If you want to give it, if you want to give it, I have heard that M4 has this now. So, I'll post a link in the show notes at thevap.com when we're done. But do you know which models use a 14-inch tube?
Well, oddly enough, that's actually quite recent models because I know. we have a client with a 2,034 footer, and several years ago, we swapped out his fluorescent lights for LEDs. They're not from M4, but they're from somebody else, and I remember we had to go through because there was ballasts in there for the old fluorescents, and we had to take this stuff out. It was a bit of a production, but it would fit in the original light, so perhaps Steve has made this somewhat simpler.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to post the link on our show notes, but with Steve-O, the M4 LED, if you use our code VAP5, you get a 5% discount. So,
yeah,
cool stuff. Anyway, thanks, Steve, for sending that along. And that's cool that he keeps updating his inventory specific for Airstreams. I mean, it started with mine years ago with the screw in 12.
Which morphed into mine.
Which morphed into yours, and I hope many others, because they really help, especially with boondocking, you know. And, you know, plus not having to have, if you're not boondocking, not having to use all that power to run your lights and all the heat.
Well, exactly. The heat is the big thing, you know. Yeah. Like, it's fine if you need the heat in there, but if you don't need the heat in there, it's, you know, if you're boondocking and it's hot, the last thing you want to do is be turning on heaters to read.
Yep. All right, let's start off with this voicemail that Brian Perkins sent in. It was an attachment, so he must have recorded it on his phone. And if you want to do that kind of recording to us, you can email it to questions@thevet.com, and you'll get it. So let's have a listen and see. I have not pre-listened.
Yeah, Brian out here in Colorado. Got the 1975 Xcella, and several recent shows, there have been some questions about the windows in the tent and what they can do to put them back and so on. And what I would ask is that could you explain a method, or have you done anything to just reduce these to, you know, to just make a single pane window? And along that, too, I also noticed that the rivet in there looks to be smaller than these regular bucked rivets. Can we just use a regular bucked rivet and slightly enlarge that hole? And any advice at all, you know, what's to use as spacers and sealant and et cetera would be greatly appreciated. Thanks.
All right, Brian, thanks for sending that in. So 75 Xcella window panes, the old dual window pane issue comes up again.
Well, I'll tell you, we've actually got a trailer in now that we've done a bunch of work to, and it had the front wing windows and the front middle window were both, or all three of them were double paned, whereas the rest of the trailer is not. And I can't quite understand that, but anyway. But what was interesting on these ones is that the wing windows, they were kind of white blotchy stuff inside, you know, and my client says, you know, can you fix that? And I said, well, there's a few possibilities we can shoot at. What we discovered is, believe it or not, the wing windows, the double window portion, the is actually on the outside of the trailer, not on the inside. And there's screws that go through from the inside that hold that frame and piece of glass onto the outside of the trailer. And of course, there's a gasket around there that sort of quasi sealed it, which obviously didn't work very well, and water got down in between. And it basically got cooked into the glass. We managed to, because they used steel screws, of course, which some of them broke, and it was quite a nightmare to get these windows off. But we managed to get a lot of it off just, you know, I did it with Scotch-Brite and dish soap, believe it or not. And a lot of it came off, but it wasn't perfect. So we tried like different compounds and stuff, because we've got all these different compounds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really just wasn't cutting it. So I said, I went over to a glass place. And, in fact, I went over to two glass places. The first glass place is very close to me that supplies us all the, you know, side windows and stuff, the flat glass
yeah.
that we do. Mm-hmm. And I said, what do you do to polish these things? And they said, we never polish them. I said, really?
Okay.
They said, yeah, we wish we could figure something out. And I said, okay. But she suggested I go to an auto glass place. So I zoomed over to an auto glass place, a very nice guy, and he tried with basically it was on a drill. It looks like a little sanding disc thing that was with different grits on this little rotary sander disc thing. And it was very fine stuff. And he used some kind of solvent on it to keep the glass from getting too hot.
Right.
To try and get some of this white stuff off. And it did a little bit, but really not much at all. Then we tried it with a razor blade. And believe it or not, the razor blade was the most effective. Still didn't get it all off. And he says it's basically, it's cooked into the glass. He said, because the water and the minerals that were in the water sat between the two panes and the sun cooked it, it obviously got really hot. Because glass apparently is porous, and it cooked into the porosity of the glass.
Mm.
And, of course, this is tempered glass. So it's, you got to watch because they can shatter pretty easily. So we haven't been totally successful. We made them an awful lot better. But, you know, it's kind of like they look great at 15, 20 feet, whereas before they looked like hell at 50 feet. But right. You get up next to it and you go, like, it looks like your window's dirty. You know, in certain places there's kind of weird streaks and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, the best thing to do is certainly get them apart and do what you can, but the razor blade, oddly, Scotch Brite dish soap, and then the razor blade on the glass is the best thing we've found so far.
So how are you getting it apart, and are you making it single pane and all that when you go put it back?
Well, we're going to actually put it back to dual pane because the second pane is the outside pane, not the inside pane.
Oh, okay.
And that's on the wing windows. I'm not talking about the, the vista views. And that may be, because I've seen different variations of wing windows as well, different eras of them, even though they're basically made from, in fact, 69 to 82. There seems to be a variety of designs here. Right. Why, I'm not really sure. 69 is fairly obvious because we have a square corner in the bottom. But the other ones, they're the same outside shape. They're interchangeable in the hole. But if you have a window, you know, if you break a window and you go get a used window from somewhere else, it may not be exactly the same style. Now, some people may not care, but others look at it and it's like, yeah, it's close, but it's not perfect. And anyway, this particular version of it, there's screws from the inside that go through the frame, inside frame, and then go into the outside frame, which is basically just a perimeter frame of the glass, which you obviously have to be very, very close. The screws are very close to the edge of the glass. There's really not much perimeter frame out there. So that comes off, and there's a some type of, well, what looks like paper sealant tape that went in there. So the screws obviously held it in place. Now, whether that was a double-sided tape type thing or whatever, I'm not really sure. It certainly wasn't a caulk. And how we're going to put it together again, I'm not really sure. We're going to use probably with bedding tape. You know, that Vintage Trailer Supply has that to put windows back in the hair, Hallmark 12, and I forget the brand, the name of it now, the model. But,
right. What about the small rivets he's talking about? The smaller size buck rivets?
I'm not seeing that because all rivets that hold it on are the same buck rivets that hold the whole trailer together.
Okay.
So I'm not sure where he's referring to there. And it may be on a side window or something that we're not seeing. Certainly, the windows with radiused corners, like on the 70s trailers, that's what I'm talking about. Certainly, there are these other little windows on the 60s trailers that are sort of below the swing open window, and they have square corners, and that's a different breed completely. But I mean, this is my experience with them. I know some years ago we've actually broken out on VistaViews. We've broken out the inside glass. Mm-hmm. And we had to be pretty creative to make it not look like it was broken out. Other VistaViews, they have like an aluminum trim ring on the inside, and it's actually a plastic inner glass, in effect, but it's plexiglass or polycarbonate or something. But anyway, it was removable. But some of them are glass and they're sealed. And in order to really disassemble them, you have to take the whole thing out of the trailer. And they will come apart. But again, they were not designed for serviceability. They were, in theory, sealed up.
Yeah. All righty. Well, I hope that helps, Brian. I know we kind of went around different versions. We didn't know exactly which one. But a lot of it is kind of just getting in there and taking a look and being creative, trying to clean them and put them back together. I know when I did
this. I must admit, I mean, this is the first time we've seen this type of double window. So, yeah, I've been doing it for quite a while.
Yeah. Yep. All right. If you need more help, Brian, be sure to call in. Maybe we can send a picture next time. Might help Colin visualize what you're working on there. This next one is a email question we got through our contact page on thevap.com. This is from Brett Nichols. His title is Cold Weather Operation of My Water Systems. To start with, I wouldn't be where I am today without a lot of advice from both of you. Oh, thanks. We'll be listening to your response during our first day on our road trip driving out to Yellowstone National Park from Connecticut. Well, I will be living in my Airstream, a 75, 27-foot overlander for 7 months while working there. My wife is driving out with me and will be coming out for a week or two during the summer. My question, when I get to Yellowstone, my Airstream will be winterized. Next time, our nighttime temps are in the teens, day times in the 30s. I have a heated water hose. I've taken out the original furnace. I have a WaveStix catalytic and a couple of electric heaters. Do I risk de-winterizing the trailer, or do I use the shower and bath facilities they have and wait till it warms up? I will have a sewage hookup. I don't want to jump through a bunch of hoops skirting the trailer just for 1 or 2 months. It does look like I could easily put out a small electric heater in the back compartment under the bathroom sink where the tank drain valves are and the water piping is. I can maintain the rest of the trailer over 60 degrees. Any thoughts? Thanks for your help. Couldn't have done it without you. Tim's book and Colin's advice. So thanks. Appreciate it, Barrett. So, can he get by and use his plumbing during these cold months, or should he just bear down and use the campground facilities?
Okay, well, the first thing, what's wonderful about these Airstream trailers is that the, at least vintage Airstream trailers, and new ones have done some silly things that I don't agree with, but and not on all models. But anyway, on all the vintage trailers, all of the plumbing system, the tank, but in Barrett's he may still have the tank below. But anyway, the piping is all inside the heated space in the trailer. And the tank in his particular trailer is below the floor, but the furnace has a duct going down there, which he's saying is not...
operation.
That doesn't exist anymore.
Yep.
So... what a lot of people don't realize, I mean, I can understand, it sounds to me like he's worried he's going to have sustained time where the temperature is going to be below freezing. And that's really where you get frost problems. I wouldn't worry about the pipes inside so much because you've got heat going in there all day. Quite frankly, as you know, these things aren't the best insulated. As long as you maintain heat inside and the temps are not brutal outside, I think that you're going to get enough heat loss down through the floor into the first tank anyway. Now, if he's at the campground, he could potentially, you know, not even use that tank and maybe drain it as much as he could. Right. And just use, you know, the city connection from the campground and do the heat tape thing on that and just run it like that. I wouldn't think, you know, I would certainly risk it, you know, but I'm kind of crazy like that. But, you know, like, when we travel to Florida, we don't put water in until we get sort of quite far south. Right. But on the way back, we didn't winterize until Binghamton, New York. And we've actually, last year, we were even, we didn't winterize till we got to Albany, New York. The year before that, we didn't winterize till we got in the driveway. So you obviously have to watch the weather. But you see, we were driving, and there's heat on at night and no heat on in the day in the trailer. But if he's got constant heat going on in the trailer while he's there, I think he's going to be pretty darn safe.
So just don't use the freshwater tank. Use the hose, heated hose, and then leave the gray valve open so they'll go straight out?
Exactly. But he's going to have that connection anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And he could even, you know, I'm not sure how well he used water there, but even if he put some insulation over top of his hose and keep it off the ground, of course, and he let a tap drip so there's constant water flow going through that that city hose, he may even be able to get away without a heat tape.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, there you go. Colin will risk it, but Colin could fix it. So, but you probably can't do it, Brett.
Yeah, but Barrett, I'll tell you, he's pretty handy. I mean, he did quite a bit of work on his trailer.
Oh, I'm sure.
So, yeah, I mean, he's taken tools and stuff with him, and he's got it together there. So,
all righty, you got this, Barrett. You got it.
Let us know how it goes. But
that's right.
We're living vicariously through you at this point. How's that?
There you go. It's a beautiful place to be going to, that's for sure.
That's right.
Okay, so this next voicemail. I didn't listen to it ahead of time, but Google says it's from Bubba from Texas. You think Google's right?
I didn't think there really was anybody named Bubba in Texas, but apparently there is.
Well, let's see if Google Translate figured it out. Here we go. Bubba from Texas.
Hello, experts. This is Bubba from Fredericksburg, Texas.
There you go.
I've called in before, and y'all have helped me out on a couple of questions. And you may remember I was Bubba Shrimp last time. Anyway.
Oh, yes.
We are still working on the 55 Flying Cloud. We're doing a ground-up renovation. The current stage is we've completed everything, and we're wiring the inside right now. And we're trying to figure out an air conditioner. The criteria is concealed and quiet. I've looked at the mini splits, and the problem with those, they're great units, but the condenser outside is big and the air handler inside is big. And we're trying to keep the layout in the 55 as original as possible. So we've looked at the Dometics, the underbench unit, and the decibel level was pretty high on that, too. Anyway, Colin, I know you've had success in installing units. I mean, how well did they work? I know back in 2013 you were working on trying to come up with different ideas and methods of installing concealed units. Anyway, I would appreciate any information you could give us. And look forward to hearing the answers. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Bubba. Appreciate that. Quiet air conditioned. It's always been a problem, hasn't it?
Right. Well, what Airstream is doing now, and it's very popular, is the ducted air. So they use a rooftop unit, and then they kind of put a bump on the roof of the trailer fore and aft, and they duct the air through that bump, and the air drops down into the trailer at various places in the trailer through the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been the quietest. Now, in fairness, I haven't heard them run, but people have said it's a noticeable difference.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I can tell you is the sort of concealed units that we've worked on in the past. The most success that you're ever going to have is, you know, I had sort of concepts that you could, you know, mount this on the floor and pump cold air into it, and the trailer eventually fills with cold air. Well, it doesn't really do that. What you have to do, similar to the rooftop units, in that the cold has to come out of ducts at the ceiling somehow or other, up high. Because what happens is the air, the cold air, is going to fall. So as it's getting pumped out the top and falling, you're going to feel cool. If there's cold air getting pumped in at the bottom and you're thinking that you're going to displace the hot air somehow or other, it doesn't really work. Where you're sitting is always going to be hot. Your feet may be nice and cool, but your head is not going to be. It's going to be hot.
Right.
So the trick is ducting it. Now, we did, and well, we've only done part of that particular one, but we did have a client that sort of took my lead, and I think many other people, there's probably listeners on here that have done this as well, that used a one of these portable units, you know, sort of things that are on wheels you can buy pretty much anywhere, and they have ducts in them, and normally you would sort of connect it up to a window in your house, you know, and blow the hot air out the window, and these things would roll around the floor. The problem, the early ones anyway that we saw, they were only, you know, 5 or 7,000 BTU, which really isn't enough for a large trailer.
Right.
But I have seen them. I haven't done anything with them, but I have seen them that are 12,000 BTU, which makes a lot more sense. So I'm sort of looking forward to working with one of those, sticking it into a closet. Literally, they take the cover off it, and it gets built in. So that duct that would normally go out a window or something, you could run that down through a hole in the floor and vent it out through a grill in the bottom of the belly pan. And then also create some ducting where the air blows out of that normally at, you know, a couple of feet off the ground, which is certainly better than 1 foot off the ground. I would create another duct that goes up, you know, using like dryer hose or something, and dump it out into the trailer, you know, like sort of at the top of the closet that you've got this thing hidden in, and, you know, maybe make the closet door a little bit lower than normal. And put, you know, some louvers or something up at the top there and blow the air out through there. That's sort of my next approach with a decent size AC unit. Obviously, the better wall insulation is going to help as well. But barring all of that, we haven't finished it yet, but we are developing an aluminum shroud, vintage-esque aluminum shroud with, you know, vintage louvers and Buck Rogers looking styling that's going to fit on a modern low-profile AC unit. So, you know, the quote-unquote ugly AC units on the top of vintage trailers, which everybody hates, but they're going like, I'd rather be cool and have an ugly thing on my roof than than hot and nothing on my roof. So once we finish those, we'll certainly let everybody know. But the idea is you just take your old you know, the original shroud off, and this thing would fit right on there properly with the same holes mounting and everything, and it would just look the part. So, yeah, it's going to be something on your roof, but it's not going to be offensive.
Right. Unless you don't like Buck Rogers.
Well, exactly. Now, on the inside, there's still that sort of that thing that's in there. But, again, you're still dealing with the noise.
Right.
But a lot of the noise from a rooftop unit is actually air noise, not necessarily the compressor. Now, these portable ones, you've got to deal with the compressor noise in the closet, but you could potentially muffle that substantially with foam and whatnot.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd recommend one way to cut back on the noise, if you're just going to go ahead and buy an AC and put it on there, is to get one of the ones that use the thermostats instead of just the hot and cold dial or the warmer and cold dial. Because they'll shut off when it reaches temperature, so that's quiet. But I think
that may not be possible in a Texas summer.
That's true. they also have two fan modes too. So when you get within like 4 degrees or something, it goes to a slower, quieter fan.
But
anyway, yeah, it's that's the thing. A big metal box out in the sun. It's. It's hard to keep it livable, I'll tell you.
It's a metal tube, not a metal box.
Metal tube. That's right.
The metal boxes are the white ones next door.
That's true. I did see a commercial that's not related, but it was a portable AC unit for your bed. And you plugged it in the wall, and it had a tube. And you attached the tube to the top of your mattress, and then you just threw your blankets over the top of that. And it blew cold air in between your sheets. So there you go.
Wow.
If you need that just for sleeping, somebody made it already. I saw it on TV.
So was it like midnight TV?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so then it has to be true.
It has to be true. All right, Bubba, good luck with that, and I hope that helped you out. We got one last question for tonight. This is from Ron Lyric. From Independence, Minnesota? Is that what it is? Amen?
Yep, Minnesota.
Minnesota.
It's right next to Worcester.
That's right. Everything's next to Worcester.
That's right.
It turns out. Thanks for doing the show. My question is, on my 61 28-foot Ambassador, I'm doing a restoration with a few modern updates. Ooh, sounds good. A new toilet, a new refrigerator with the old refrigerator door applied to the front of it, and a new furnace. So, with the new Suburban forced air furnace, should I modify the original catalytic exhaust cover to keep the exterior original? Or should I put in a patch on the outside and just use the new inlet and outlet vents that come with the furnace? I'm going to keep up the great work. Thanks, Ron.
Okay, well, the first thing is the original furnace in there is not a catalytic heater.
No?
It was basically a box with a heating element, and there may have been some rudimentary electrical fan arrangement going with that, but really not much. My 59... still has the original furnace, which is a pretty crude furnace, and it's just got a chimney going straight out the roof, in effect. Tim, your 60, which, of course, I don't even think you have the furnace there anymore, but because you would never need it, really, in sunny California. It was a slightly different generation. I'm not sure if it may have been the same as this one or not, but the furnace chimney, in effect, looks similar to the hot water heater cover on early 60s and late 50s trailers, which is something that protrudes quite a bit. And it's, I don't know, maybe 2 foot by 18 inches, sticks out probably a couple of inches. It's quite a noticeable thing on the side. Some people hate the look of them. Some people love the look of them because they're original. That's what they're supposed to be anyway, so why should we change it? Ron's trailer looks very period correct, certainly on the outside. So we have taken these things off in the past, and you're left with basically a large square hole that you have to put a patch. So what we've done for some customers is, you know, because we have a louver press, we make a louvered panel that fits on there. So it looks basically like something's going on in there, but you're not really sure what, but it's there for a purpose. And it's a dummy louvered panel just to cover that up, because we put catalytic heaters in many trailers. In this particular case, though, because he's got a modern furnace going on there, I think what I would do is take this whole cover off, install the modern chimney arrangement, and then modify this cover by basically cutting holes in the back of it and whatnot for the modern chimney to exhaust into this vintage chimney cover arrangement. And that way the trailer is still going to look original on the outside, and this chimney is going to function not in exactly the same way it did originally, but you know, there's still going to be fumes and hot air coming out of it. So that's what I would do in this particular case, but it really depends if you love this look or not.
Well, I can tell you from having put a patch over where my water heater was, not the furnace, and the water, I think my water heater cover, like you said, looks something similar to this. It just the big patch there, not... You know, it really stands
not
out.
Not particularly attractive.
It stands out more than this, even this thing being not so attractive. It stands out more because it's not meant to be that way.
Exactly.
So that's my two cents. If you can modify this, like Colin said, but you do have to make sure you're not restricting airflow, because that's an inlet and an outlet, I believe, on that, what you're installing.
Right. So. Yeah, but, you know, I'm sure if you cut away the back of it, and you have to be a little bit creative here and really check things, but I think it's possible to do. Even in a worst-case scenario, you notice in the side of this, there is a hole there, and that may line up or closely line up, or you could make it line up somehow or other by creating some internal ducting or something, that it could literally function like it wasn't there and the original modern chimney was in place.
Yeah.
So
cool.
That's what I do. And the other thing is there's certainly a bunch of rusty fasteners on here. I get rid of them and put stainless fasteners, and I think you could make this look better than it does now without an awful lot of effort.
Yeah. Yep. But, yeah, nice, solid-looking trailer and a good model, Ambassador. Can't complain there.
That's right. You know, they're, well, in my year, 59, it was the largest production trailer they made. I'm not sure in 60 or 61 if it was, because I know certainly Sovereigns were out there. But even 59, there were Sovereigns, but apparently they're special order.
Yeah. Well, mine was built in 59. Wasn't it? Since I bought it, since it was sold in 60, is that how they do that?
More than likely, yeah. Certainly the model year shift, I mean, these days the model year shift comes about in right around now, I believe. So, you know, you could probably still have a 2018 that was made in January or February, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure. But anyway, it's right around this period, I think, that the shift is happening. Maybe it's January 1st. I'm not really sure. But anyway, I think they make them into the new year slightly.
There you go. All right, Ron, thanks for sending in. Appreciate it. And appreciate everybody else as well. So we've run through all of our questions that we had backed up. So please send those in, questions@thevap.com, our email address. Or you can go to the VAP and use our contact page. Or if you're brave, call us at 707-533-4827 and leave a message on our voicemail line, and we will get you on the show. Once again, Colin, thanks a lot, and we'll see you next time.
Good night, all, and if anybody's going to Lollapalooza, we'll see you in a few weeks.
Awesome.
Lumapalooza 10.
Ooh. All right. See you down the road.
Yeah. Good night, all.
Here we are. Oh, seriously?
Sorry.
Three, two, one.